Blog Talk Radio.
To another live edition, an MMA edition of Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. So pleased to be with you this Monday evening, and I can't begin to tell you what a great show we have for you here today. It's really unbelievable. Our first guest, who's going to be calling in just a little while, is Ash Bowman. He's a journeyman MMA veteran. He runs the website and actually created the website LegendsOfMMA.com, and be sure to visit that because it's very, very important that we have a Hall of Fame site, some spot on the landscape where we could recognize non-Zuffa UFC fighters. And this has been one of the criticisms lobbed against the UFC and Zuffa, and they've recently kind of made amends with some of the older fighters, some of the fighters that really should be in the Hall of Fame that, you know, existed pre-Zuffa. But I can see an attempt, and I've seen an attempt for Zuffa to really just have everybody focus on the present, not have a real understanding of the past, which is why, you know, if you mention certain names, you mention a name like John Peretti, it's sure to drive, you know, Dana and the folks over at Zuffa crazy. Even a guy like Eddie Goldman, who was around during those days. In fact, Eddie was a judge on one of the earlier UFC days, and his radio show on IATA in 2001, I believe, was just really instrumental. I mean, Eddie Goldman has been there from the beginning, along with Dave Meltzer and very, very few people of the sport. And Eddie's an extremely relevant figure, particularly in the world of MMA media. But you'll see no mention, of course, from the Zuffa-approved radio hosts, podcasters, there's a million of them out there now, website owners and whatnot, and it's unfortunate. So that's what's good, one of the good things about what Ash Bowman is doing. And he also has a storied MMA career where he's fought a number of top fighters. You know, UFC title contender Josh Thompson, he's fought Efrain Escudero, and others, and we want to talk to him about that. And he is a former member of one of the most legendary fight camps out there in the Lion's Den. And, you know, let me tell you something. I don't say this lightly. I really mean this. Carson's Corner, over the past several years, has really developed a relationship with a lot of Lion's Den fighters. I don't know what it is, but it's you know, myself, this show, and the Lion's Den have just connected over the years. I mean, we've had Guy Mezger on the program. In fact, Guy rarely does any interviews, but Guy will always come on Carson's Corner because we've had some classic interviews, including in January of 2012, where Guy Mezger made news when he revealed on this show that he stopped that horrific knife attack in a parking lot, I think, of a Dick's Sporting Goods, and he was injured, and he posted pictures of that. And that made news right here on Carson's Corner. Mikey Burnett has been a longtime guest on Carson's Corner. Mikey's, you know, I'm assuming he's still training. It's been a while since I spoke to him. He's got his own school. He had his own school years ago. We've had other Lion's Den fighters, and so it's an honor. Anytime we have somebody on from the Lion's Den, it's an absolute honor. So we've got that coming up now. Ash has just called. We're going to get to him in a couple seconds. And in the top of the hour, we have Tracy Sneed on. He's a professional boxer fighting a super middleweight bout. He's got an awesome record at 27-2, and he's from Oklahoma. And we're going to give him a shot to promote his fight coming up on August 23rd in just a few days. That's going to be legendary. And last but not least, the last hour of the show, we will have an update, a 51-minute update with Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn got out of jail. However, he is in the confines of a mental facility right now. He's going to explain that, what happened, some breaking news there, and he's going to tell us all about his release and what he's got going on. You wanted him for months. Everybody was asking me about Dan Quinn, and now finally he's back here on Carson's Corner. And last bit of news, we got the old Carson's Corner shows. I got them mailed to me from a wonderful gentleman in North Carolina, Andy Bryant, who I can't thank enough, has saved all of our shows. The amount of demand for all of our shows over the years, I mean, I can't tell you how many people would ask me for this show, for that show, and I really think that these shows, these interviews, are a very important part of the MMA landscape, because as you know, we here on Carson's Corner go beyond the typical, you know, questions that you hear on a lot of these corporate shows. Anybody doing research, anybody looking to really explore the history of MMA and have a better understanding of you know, fighters, their camps, and the sport itself has to be familiar with some of our interviews in the past. I mean, they're just absolutely legendary. They really are. So having said that, let's go to our first guest of the evening. The website is www.legendsofmma.com. Remember that website, folks, and be sure to visit it. My guest today is the founder of that website. His name, of course, is Ash Bowman, and he's a longtime MMA personality, whether it be fighting, promoting the sport, or whatever. His Hall of Fame is a true MMA Hall of Fame, and not the one that only Zuffa recognizes. He's an advocate for all things MMA. He was born in Charleston, South Carolina, watched very first UFC featuring Ken Shamrock back in the 1990s, and right then and there he decided to pursue a career in professional mixed martial arts. He successfully passed the legendary Lion's Den tryouts on May 13, 2000. He's a Strikeforce and WEC veteran and, of course, a former member of the Lion's Den under Ken Shamrock. He's fought the best in the sport, and without that, I'll be quiet right now. We'll get him on the show. Ash, how are you? It's great to have you on the program.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good, good, good. Really, really like we have I feel like we have a lot to talk about here. I mean, this interview could go in many directions, but let's get it going by talking about your Hall of Fame first and foremost. Take us through your Hall of Fame and how it differs from the other Hall of Fame that some people might think is the only one in existence.
Well, first and foremost, just to, you know, to go ahead and give a little bit of, I guess, not really a history lesson to most people out there, but anyone outside of the MMA world, you know, if you're a general casual fan, you may not know about organizations like Pancrase or King of the Cage or I've ever heard about Shooto or anything like that. You're probably just familiar with the brand UFC, and there's nothing wrong with that, and Zuffa and UFC have definitely taken the sport and elevated it to a completely whole new level. And I applaud them for that. But on the other side of the coin, and I hope everyone will agree with me on this, is that the mixed martial arts sport itself is a lot larger than any one organization. So in order to be fair and be legitimate, you have to represent the athletes of the entire sport across the board. So you may have some athletes or inductees that eventually will be in the Hall of Fame that may have never fought in the UFC, but may have fought in another major organization, such as, again, Pancrase or, you know, the Pride banner or something like that.
Very well said. And, you know, I'm looking at the Legends of MMA site, and I see that your Hall of Fame has people like Jerry Bolander, Stephen Quadros, Guy Mezgren, Boss Rutten, among others. Talk about your selection process. Maybe talk about some of these inducted members. I mean, is the Hall of Fame invite only, or can people either be suggested as members or even suggest themselves?
Well, absolutely. I created this knowing that the Hall of Fame and the sport of MMA is a lot larger, again, as I said previously, bigger than any one organization and or myself or my staff. So we do have a board and of voters, but we also we do this for the fans as well. So fans have been craving a legitimate Hall of Fame for years, and not taking any away from Zuffa or the UFC's Hall of Fame, but it's an in-house Hall of Fame. And people may or may not get inducted based on their relationship with certain people in the UFO organization. I'll just say it like that to be diplomatic.
Right.
And so what I do is that we have a staff. I have a vice president. I have a board of directors, which his name is Chris Maltzberger. I have people on our staff. We vote people in. But we also do, like, you get on my Facebook page on Ask Bowman or any of our websites, you know, we love feedback. We want people to help in the process of nominations and helping getting them inducted in, because it's about the fans and it's about the athletes again. It's not about me or my ego or, you know, who I want, because I personally, I could tell you I have people I won't name, but I might have one or two people on my roster that I personally don't get along with, but at the end of the day, what they've done for the sport and what they've done inside and outside of the ring to help contribute, to help elevate the sport, to get recognition globally is undeniable. So I can't argue with that.
Now, I know there are a lot of people that are not happy that Dana White refuses to honor Frank Shamrock. I mean, I see that you have him in the real Hall of Fame. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? Frank should be in anyone's idea of a Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you guys, there's 100 people. There's at least 100 people right now that I could probably name off the top of my head that absolutely deserve a place in the Hall of Fame right now. But what I did and what our company did and what the Hall of Fame decided to do is that we contacted each of these guys personally. Mm-hmm. I personally contacted Randy Couture and had conversations with Randy via phone, via email, Facebook messaging, and whatnot, okay? I did the same with Dan Severn, Mark Coleman, you name it, and go on down the line. I've actually had personal conversations with these guys to actually see if they were even interested in this, see if they would help legitimize, you know, and validate what I was doing, you know. I just didn't want to induct someone in and have something that was just a virtual Hall of Fame and go, yeah, I got so-and-so in it, and we didn't even have a board of voters. We didn't do this and that. It's just my idea, you know, and that's not what happened. We have a business license. We have a building. We have an office. We're actually working on expanding out to have a grand opening in Las Vegas eventually for for the Hall of Fame offices and a museum, so people can actually come in and experience the Hall of Fame for themselves. You know, you walk in and you can actually purchase the products and get that whole nostalgic feeling, you know, and learn a little bit about the sport, history of the sport as well.
There is also a controversial series of articles on Sure Dog by writer Todd Martin. You know, we don't need to imagine an MMA Hall of Fame. One already exists, and it's Legends of MMA. I mean, but there are some other issues with the articles that had people complaining. One was the statement that Igor Vochanchin was a borderline candidate who didn't quite make it. And Igor won, I think, almost 40 fights in a row, multiple one-night tournaments back then, and went something like 19-8-1 in Pride when he was already past his prime. Do you think that Igor should be in any MMA Hall of Fame? What say you?
I personally think that, again, let me just go ahead and say that the criteria that we have for the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame is some of the basic requirements and prerequisites is that you have to be a minimum involved, in the sport of a minimum of 10 years, and you have to have won a championship in a major organization or you know, something like that. And we have other, again, criteria. I'm just not looking at it in front of me right now, so I do apologize. But long story short, having said that, Igor Vochanchin definitely meets a lot of the requirements. Now, I'm not quite sure. I would have to do a background check on his accolades and awards, but he certainly is someone that could be considered and a possibility and a candidate, you know. And again, that's why we have the fans and the voting board to elect these guys and then help induct them, because if it was up to me, you know, I would have already inducted, guys like you know, Frank and Pat Miletich and you know, all those guys years ago. I mean, I would have done that day one. You know, I would have had Joe Rogan in, you know, last year when we did this. But again, what we're doing too is everybody gets a championship ring, and then they get a lot of things that are, you know, are very, very costly and coming with the Hall of Fame. So it's a huge investment on my part. And so far, I mean, I've invested my whole entire life savings into something like this. And, you know, I'm giving back to the sport. I haven't gotten anything back out of it yet. But I'm doing this for the sport and for the people, so hopefully they'll appreciate it. But, yeah, make a long story short, just stay on track. Igor Bertanchin is definitely a strong candidate. Someone like that is definitely qualified. You know, someone like Vernon White, mm-hmm. qualified. Someone, again, this may piss some people off, and excuse my language, but Brock Lesnar is not eligible right now, and that's because simply Brock Lesnar has not fought in MMA for 10 years. You know, he's won a championship, but he's only been, I think, involved in MMA for about 4, maybe 5 years. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. But, well, you mentioned that you're going to be expanding the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame, opening some new buildings and whatnot. Is there any additional steps that you're taking in terms of raising awareness other than that?
Yes, sir. I'm trying to, honestly, and I'll have to delve into a touchy subject as we speak right now because of this. I'm trying to contact people like Sherdog. When I noticed the article written by Todd Martin, I immediately contacted Todd Martin and notified him and made him aware of what we were doing in our project, and he, of course, apologized for not knowing about us. But I don't think it was necessarily Todd's fault that he didn't know. You know, we just need people to get aware, you know, and social media sites like Sherdog and Facebook and things like that do help. And I've also reached out to Kevin Iole from Yahoo Sports.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very busy gentleman, but he's also a great, great advocate for the sport and for boxing. And I think someone like the Kevin Iole statuses, and, you know, I'm also trying to reach out to Sports Illustrated to get them aware to have an article done. I've reached out to several places that are have a lot of influence within the general public and the mixed martial arts world. And since I'm on the subject, there's another popular website, and I don't want to make anyone mad here, but it's the UG, a.k.a., you know, www.mma.tv.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner is planning on launching a MMAHallOfFame.com website. Now, again, that could raise conflict of interest with what we're doing, but we want people to understand that what we are, the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame, is the legitimate, official, licensed, and registered Hall of Fame organization. We are the authority on inducting athletes and fighters and coaches into the Hall of Fame. We have a board. We're legitimate. You know, you can't, like I said, that's why we took the whole process of contacting each individual athlete personally. I have Randy Couture's personal express permission to use his likeness in certain projects. I have the permission, express permission from Frank and Ken, so on and so forth. What I'm doing is these guys are actually, we've been planning, we were very, very close last year to having a televised inaugural MMA Hall of Fame award show, and I had some investors back out at the last minute simply because they saw the Fighters Only award show that was happening in Vegas, and they were like, well, there's an award show going on. I'm like, yeah, so but by your logic, so there's an Oscar award, so there shouldn't be an Academy Award or a Golden Globe or, you know, an Emmy Award simply because there's already an Oscar Awards. I said, no, man, we're doing something that's apples and oranges.
Right.
You know? So we're in the process of having this, trying to find a network that's willing to take a chance and gamble with an annual televised award show. But, yeah, we're doing everything in our power to make people aware. I go around to local events, whether it's in Colorado or Cheyenne, Wyoming, or, you know, Nevada. Anywhere there's an event, I got some people I know, I'll make an appearance and shake hands and give out cards and make people aware. But we got a lot of things planned. It's just getting all launched off the ground. You know, it's been a big hurdle.
How can I, Bob Carson, show my support for the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame? I mean, we need for people to know that the MMA world is actually larger than one organization. I mean, you know, so is there something I could do personally, just, you know, keep on mentioning it or any other ways that we can get this out to the public?
Yeah, just make sure that everybody's aware that, you know, there is Legends of MMA Hall of Fame, you know, our websites. We're also working very diligently in getting other people to advertise with us so they can, everyone's linked together, basically. You know what I mean? This is the MMA market is a very large market, but at the same time, as you know, being involved in the market yourself and in the sport, it's also a small, tightly knit circle, too. So everyone knows everybody, and, you know, I think with everyone else's support, like your support, and just basically all the fans and everything, and just, you know, just general feedback, I mean, together I think we can all accomplish this, you know. And again, I realize that, you know, I need the fans, and I need the MMA athletes and the, you know, everybody in the community to really back us on this, because that's, we're doing it for you guys, you know what I mean? So, yeah, anytime someone talks about it, is a thumbs up, you know. I mean, just refer to them to the website, via Facebook. They can contact me. I mean, I'm an insomniac, if you will, so I'm up all the time working on the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame, all the time.
What about the other MMA Hall of Fame claimants out there? I mean, none of them seem to have amounted to that much so far. There's one Hall of Fame, MMA.com, declares itself the official Hall of Fame for mixed martial arts, but I'm not sure they're in a position of sufficient authority to assign that title anywhere, much less to themselves. What about that? What makes Legends of MMA Hall of Fame different and more legitimate than some of these other past attempts? I mean, your connection to the Lions Den and the early history of the sport seems like a good basis for you to go ahead and do this.
I just want to reiterate that the fact that I spent the last 14 months, you know, contacting, you know, Legends of MMA celebrates its first year anniversary this month on the 24th. Mm-hmm. And again, I spent the last, you know, better part of 14 months, you know, getting this, contacting everyone. Again, I constantly stay in contact with Dan Severn, Mark Coleman, Randy Couture, Ken Shamrock, Jesse Bowman. I have conversations with these guys, and I'm always up to par and keeping them up with what's going on. And the simple fact that I have their expressed permission and they validate what I'm doing. Who else better to help validate an organization that's going to represent you in the Hall of Fame than the actual athletes like Randy Couture? You know, hey,
true.
Randy says, hey, Ash, I totally, you know, Randy's honored. Randy goes, I'm honored to be a part of this. Boss himself handwrote me a letter, goes, man, I love the fact what you're doing. This is a great idea. I love it. I'm honored to be a part of it. Yes. Frank Shamrock, everyone was so pumped about this, you know. And what makes ours, again, different is the fact that, again, A, number one, we have the endorsement and express permission from every individual athlete. I literally have, you know, their blessing, if you will, to get make sure this is a success. And then, again, you know, with the fans, I mean, you know, we are licensed and registered. We have a business license. We have a building. You know, we have merchandise that we are in the process right now of creating and marketing with other toy makers, merchandise makers right now. So we speak to things that probably have never been introduced into the MMA market as of yet.
Now, folks, go ahead and stop by the Legends of MMA website. And also I saw on that site a reference to the MMA Museum founded by our friend Jeremy Kubal. What can you tell us about that museum?
Okay, Jeremy Kubal is an absolute genius. This guy is I found him actually through Frank Shamrock. Frank, as I was approaching Frank was probably, believe it or not, I'm a former student of Ken Shamrock. For over 14 years, I was a member of the Lions Den. And before I ever contacted Ken, I actually contacted Frank. He was probably one of the first members or inductees on the Hall of Fame that I actually contacted to let him know what I was doing. I said, hey, do you think this is a good idea? Can this succeed? Can we do something about this? Do you think I'm crazy for even trying this? And he goes, absolutely not, man. This is awesome. And so long story short, I've been involved in the sport long enough to know the ins and outs of both sides of the business. I was involved in MMA before it was a business, before it became a commodity, before it was ever televised, you know?
Right.
And I've also seen the ugly part of the business where people, you know, if you're not marketable or if, you know, if you're involved or, you know, basically just have any connections to someone that may or may not have severed ties with Zuffa, it may or not affect you as far as your personal career. And I've seen that happen, you know, and I don't want to name any names and throw people under the bus or throw salt, but there are a lot of things in this business that I've been aware to and I've been privileged to or just been exposed to that a lot of people haven't. And so I have that on my side to help with the experience of creating something like this. And, you know, the fact that Frank and them all believe in me and they're wanting to personally endorse me, I mean, that to me tells me I'm on the right track. I'm not just some guy that's got this website and I created, you know, and I'm like,
sure,
yeah, this is it. This is the, I'm going to self-proclaim all this and this and that. That was not the case. I actually did the work, did the research, invested every penny I got, and got everything licensed, registered, and legitimized. And we even got everything trademarked via the U.S. Postal, or it's not Postal Service, but the patent offices and trademark offices. So we've done a lot of work getting this thing up and running, and, I mean, we've got a lot longer, you know, road ahead of us, but again, we're off to a good start.
My unpaid intern, Donnie, wanted me to ask you if you guys want anything of his for the museum, and I wouldn't listen to Mash. I mean, he's been my intern for 8 years now, and I don't exactly see him as a key member of the MMA community. He's more like a canker sore that I can't get rid of. But we'll circle back to the Hall of Fame discussion. But I want to introduce people to, you know, how you got started in MMA. So I wanted to kind of switch gears here for that for a few minutes, if you don't mind. You were growing up in South Carolina. Were you involved in any sports or martial arts?
Believe it or not, I was about, I don't know, I think I was 13, 14, or 15 when I first saw the UFC. Excuse me, the UFC when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And up until that point, I think I was about 14 when I got involved in traditional martial arts. And I had never in my life had ever thrown a football or kicked a soccer ball or anything like that. I just, not that I didn't have any desire for it, it just wasn't my cup of tea. I don't know. I just wasn't drawn to it. And so I would always watch Chuck Norris' old TV shows and movies and stuff like that. I think it was the Saturday or the Sunday Kung Fu theaters. And and of course, when I believe the movie Bloodsport came out,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was huge for the people back then because, you know, this is during the ninja 80s and 90s craze, you know, where, you know, everyone thought that, you know, if you practice ninjutsu or, you know, something of that nature, it was very mystical, you know, you were just unstoppable, you know, very, very just, I don't know, godlike or whatever, you know. And, of course, with the UFC came out and it opened everyone's eyes as to what reality was. And I was drawn to it. I just remember watching Royce Gracie and, you know, his at the time, you know, we didn't know really. I mean, I wore a gi at the time, but it wasn't a jiu-jitsu gi.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew what, I mean, he was wearing, but I didn't know why he was wearing, you know, that. I didn't understand what Brazilian jiu-jitsu was at all. Honestly, and I remember watching Ken Shamrock, and what called me about Ken was his general physique. I thought Ken Shamrock was a total package. He had the look, he had the attitude,
right.
he had the body for it, you know. And he goes in there, and he just I thought he made a really great run as an ambassador early on for the sport, and so did Hoyce, of course. I mean, who better to embody mixed martial arts and Brazilian jiu-jitsu than a guy with, you know, virtually no muscles and just pure technique, and just to do what he did was obviously unprecedented. So I was drawn to it. So, yeah, that was the only sport I ever got involved in, was basically mixed martial arts and karate from day one.
You know, when you saw Ken on TV, did you ever at all think that one day you'd be one of his fighters, you'd be on his team? I mean, not many people can be sitting at home dreaming so big and then actually make that happen. I mean, what do you think it is about you that sets you apart such that you were able to actually end up on the famed Lions Den fight team?
If you know anything about me at all and you know about my personal story, you'll know I'm a risk taker. I've always been a risk taker. And sometimes against better judgment, you know, it's worked out for me sometimes. You know, it hasn't, but I've learned my lessons in life. But one thing I can honestly say is that it's because I've been a risk taker, is that that's why it led me to believing in myself to begin with, even getting a shot at the Lions Den. And just a little bit of history lesson here. Jerry Bolander and Frank and guys like Joe Hurley and all of those earlier generation, the actual first generation of the Lions Den were actually in Lodi and San Diego. I was calling those guys then, and I had heard about the famed Lions Den tryouts. I mean, I watched Ken from day one. I was always already drawn to it, but when I knew he had a camp and a team, from that point on, I was wanting to know what I could do to get an opportunity at that, and it took me, I believe, 3 to 3.5 years of constantly calling these guys and bugging them, and just, I mean, I had conversations with Jerry Bolin before he even knew who the hell I was, just trying to get a shot or opportunity to show these guys, or I thought I was tough, you know, I thought I was tough until I knew what tough was, and so I got a call one day, I gave up after about 3.5 years, true story to be told, I gave up trying to get into the Lions Den. I didn't think that I was ever good enough or just, you know, maybe no one takes me seriously. You know, the calls, I started to lay back off on the phone calls, the correspondence as much. I was just was like, man, you know, maybe these guys think I'm just some, you know, wannabe, you know. And then I got a call one day about, like I said, 3.5 years later from Ken's then in-law, I believe it was Mr. Robert. He's like, hey, Ash, this is Robert from the Lions Den. He goes, you know, we got a tryout from this date, which was back then, May 13th, 2000. And they threw the Lions Den to the San Diego location at that time and asked me if I wanted to come try out. And I remember the day like it was yesterday, and I pretty much dropped my my life and put everything on hold, and then I literally left everything I knew to leave a small town in South Carolina to go out west. Never been to California in my life at all, and had traveled out to California. And the first thing I did when I get to California, of course, is to try out for the world-famous Ken Shamrock's Lions Den, one of my idols of all time. So I was definitely in awe.
Well, you know, some listeners may not be aware of what the old Lions Den tryouts were like. I mean, can you describe that process, if you will? Because from my understanding, I mean, you know, people were passing out. You know, it was people, the stories, the testimonials that we heard about, you know, just how hard Ken was during those tryouts, you know, the injuries and whatnot. It seems like, you know, certainly – could be considered survival of the fittest.
Absolutely. And again, this is just for anyone else's just personal knowledge. A lot of people don't know this, but I'm the only guy that I know of in the history of the Lions Den, and you may have to check with Ken Shamrock or some of the other former Lions Den guys to validate this, but I believe I'm the only guy that has ever had to pass two tryouts. And Ken did that to me for a show. We did a Spike TV show in 2005, a pilot. We were filming, and at that time, Anthony Johnson, who was known as AJ, Anthony Rumble Johnson, he was also a member of the Lions Den.
Oh, wow.
Richard Montour. There's a few other members that people don't know about that actually tried out and passed. And Ken, for not for entertainment purposes, but for the show and the pilot, he wanted someone that's already been there, done that, to show the other guys and show the TV crew what it was like. So he elected me against my own will. I used to say, hey, I want you to do this. And so I did it, and I passed two tryouts, and I already had done it. So I was just like, man, why am I doing this again? I've already done it, you know. But to me, I think that's a personal testimony to me. That's a personal something that I pat myself on the back occasionally, and I toot my own horn because, as you know, or a lot of people know, in the MMA world, these things are legendary. A lot of guys came in going, and it couldn't even pass one tryout, let alone succeed and pass one. I passed two. And I had to fight Vernon White on my first one and Robbie Kilpatrick. And after these tryouts are brutal, man. We're talking you're running, I think, a minimum warm-up of, you know, 4 to 5 miles. And this is at no certain pace. You have to run, okay? It's nothing's easy in the Lions Den tryouts. And my first one was at the San Diego park. I can't remember which park it was, but there was this hill I will never, ever forget in my life. Probably Stephen Sullivan never remembered, but I remember, you know, we had 12 or 13 applicants for the tryout. And we had people that were in the military, Navy SEALs. I mean, we're talking, you know, guys that had all these, you know, championships and awards and, you know, badasses supposedly. And I remember in the first, I think it was the first 10 minutes, and I'm not lying when I say this, we had three applicants quit in the first 10 minutes.
I believe that. Yeah, it's, you know, because Ken brings some of that attitude of testing the newcomers. I mean, you know, there's no question about that. Was there any point during the tryout where you thought you were, you know, they were pushing you particularly hard, or did you feel like any of it was unfair at the time?
You know, at the time, and I'll have to say this for me. I can't speak for everyone else, so I will say from my perspective, at the time when I was out there, I was so green because, you know, you're talking about Ken Shamrock and these other Lion's Den guys, and to me, I thought the Lion's Den guys, and for historical purposes, I may be wrong, so people can correct me if I'm wrong, but the MMA world, I think the Lion's Den guys were the first MMA prototype team where, you know, you had a successful group of guys that belonged to one team that were doing high-level fighting at that time. You know, those guys were pretty much the crème of the crop at that time. And so these guys were high-level athletes. And, you know, where's the guy that's an aspiring athlete that comes out and, you know, I don't know what's right and what's wrong, so I don't know if what they're telling me is, you know, part of a mental thing. I knew from get-go, I told myself, I do remember telling myself this, that this is all mental. No matter what they say or no matter what they do, as long as you don't give up, you know, obviously, hopefully you'll make it, is what I kept telling myself in my head. So this is all mental. This is all a game. And, you know, I think there were times during the tryout or tryouts, I remember both of them very, very vividly. I think there was times that I wanted to quit. I questioned myself. I'm like, I don't have to do this. See, when you come out to the Lion's Den tryouts, you're there on your own free will and accord. No one's right. Forcing you. It's all voluntary. And let me tell you something. The selection process, just to be selected to be a tryout guy, is a hard, long process, too. He doesn't just take anybody. I mean, so he's going through a selection process before he even gets to the guys that are going to be applicants, if you will, for the tryout. And then when you get there, you know, there's a lot of discouraging things that go on. It's a mind game. I mean, there's things that are being said to you that what they want you to quit, and it's not really that they quit. They're just telling you that. So,
Donnie, you know, just passed me a note. My unpaid intern, Donnie, just passed me a note and wanted me to let you know that his favorite fighter was Trey Teligman. What was Trey like? I mean, we've had Trey on Carson's Corner several times, and he's going to be a favorite friend of the show. Really, really good guy down there in Texas. I can only imagine, you know, how fun it was, how fun it must have been to be around, you know, these guys.
Trey, I was around guys like Vernon and, you know, Joe Hurley and Ken a lot more than the, you know, Guy and Trey, but I do have a good amount of experience and memories of those guys. And Trey was always a very stand-up guy. I thought he was an intense athlete when he was in the ring, but he knew how to turn it off when he was outside of the ring. If that makes sense, I thought he was just a professional. And we still maintain a relationship to this day. You know, we'll Facebook one another or we'll make comments here and there. And you know, they're very funny and stuff and very tasteful, you know. I mean, everyone still maintains a great relationship, but I personally remember, for me, guys like Trey Teligman, guys like Jerry Bolander, you know, guys like Mikey Burnett and Guy Mezger, all of these guys, Vernon White, these guys are, to me, you know, I grew up watching these guys, and they were very iconic and very influential and very just, you know, I don't know. They just, to me, I thought they were very impactful in what I did, and they had a big part in helping make me. I looked up to them, okay, and they never disappointed me. Not one time. Not one time was I ever disappointed. You know, there's a lot of rumors back in the day that, you know, the Lion's Den guys had attitudes, egos, and they were just puffed up steroid guys, and that's not really the truth, man. That's part of the whole mystique of the MMA world. You know, it's just no,
right.
It's not. That may be a fraction of something true to that, but no, there weren't, man. Trey Teligman to this day is a funny, great guy. He's married to he's got a beautiful wife. He's successful.
Yep.
Oh, and I believe to this day, him and Guy are very, very still tightly knit. And
yeah.
And as well as Alex Andrade, do not let me forget Alex Andrade. You know, there are so many guys that are in the lines and the pioneers that, you know, people should not, you know, forget or overlook, you know.
Well, I want to mention some names here and get your reaction to them. You mentioned Guy Mesker. What about Mikey Burnett?
Mikey Burnett's a funny guy. I remember him from, actually, believe it or not, my introduction to the Lions Den, before I ever got the tryouts, I fought Joe Hurley in 1997 at the Bronco Bowl Arena on October 24th. And on that card was Eves Edwards. He made his debut that night. I made my debut. Frank Shamrock, Guy Mesger, Trey Tellerman, and Mikey Burnett and these guys were there. And I remember, man, just Mikey Burnett is one of the funniest guys. And I think at the time, if I'm not mistaken, at the time, Mikey was a pretty much pound for pound one of the baddest dudes walking in MMA for a minute. I mean, people might not know that. It wasn't like a widely known fact, but Mikey Burnett, I believe for a guy that walked around at 165, he used to push about 400 and something pounds for bench press, and he was just a pound for pound one of the strongest guys, and he had hands. I mean, this guy had some serious leather he could throw. And, you know, I look up to these guys, and I think that someone like Mikey Burnett is a phenomenal athlete. And, you know, I wish, you know, it's unfortunate what happened to him on the his stint as the Ultimate Fighter, or I believe
right.
He severely suffered a neck injury. But, I mean, these guys to me are still very iconic. I know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Mikey's very spiritual now. He's always making Facebook posts and stuff that are very, very, you know, just to make you aware about certain things and just challenge your conscience, you know, just make sure that, you know, you're on track with things as a human being. I like Mikey. I mean, I have nothing but mad respect for every one of these guys.
What about Pete Williams?
Pete. I love Pete. Pete's another great guy. I think that I personally, again, I don't want to upset anyone, but I think that Pete's career was cut shorter than what it should have been. I think Pete probably quit, or not say quit, but I think, you know, Pete's career ended probably maybe when he was in his prime. I could be wrong, or maybe getting out of his prime, but I thought that Pete had a lot more to offer and show people than he was given the opportunity, or maybe, not saying he didn't give an opportunity because he was given opportunities, but I think there's a lot more to Pete Williams that people didn't get to see that I think that was just could have been phenomenal. You know, his knockout over fellow Legends of MMA inductee Mark Coleman is, you know, to this day is probably what they call it, the kick heard around the world, I believe. You know, Pete's a young guy. He had a look. He's a great, great, you know, great fighter. And I just think that, you know, I would like to see him go on pursue it a little bit longer. But everyone had their reasons for why they do what they do. You know, yeah, that's my opinion about Pete. I think he's just a great guy. Phenomenal athlete. I just thought I would like to see his career going on a little bit longer.
Yeah, so some of the guys that I have on my list that I wanted to run by you, we already spoke about. You mentioned Alex Andrade. We've had him on the show. Vernon Tiger White, again, we've had him on the show. Joe Hurley, all these guys. Is there anybody I'm missing? I know that some of our newer listeners may not have that deep background in what we now call old school MMA. So give them an idea of the so-called old days. I mean, here's a name that old-school fans and long-time listeners of the show might recall. Eric Valetudo Ninehouse, another person from the earlier days, were supposed. Were you and Eric affiliated with the Lions then at the same time?
I don't recall. I don't believe so.
Right.
And, again, I've been hit a lot, but it doesn't ring a bell to me. But, again, it's a possibility we may have been in the same circles at the same time. I just, you know, at that time I was such a new guy and a green guy that I didn't, I was probably so starshook, you know, and surprised that it's hard to say. I don't want to say yes and say no, but the name doesn't really ring a bell off the top of my head. So I don't think we were, but it's a possibility because I was such a newbie. You never know with me.
Well, you know, Tanya, years ago when I had Eric on the show, Tanya Shamrock emailed into the show and said, you know, basically Eric mischaracterized his relationship with the Lions. I'm not taking the side either way. I wasn't there. I don't know. But, you know, mischaracterized his his affiliation with the Lions. Then she said he was more of a gopher there. And I don't know. You know, Eric is he's come on the show and he's helped me out getting guests before, so I consider him a friend of the show. But I'm guessing you know you may not have heard of him. We have some callers here. We've got a bunch of people on the line. I know Tracy Sneed is on the line. We're supposed to get in touch with him in about 10-15 minutes to discuss briefly his upcoming fight. But would you mind if we take a couple phone calls?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Let's go to I'm going to guess this is Clint from Texas. I'm not sure if he wants to ask you a question or if he just wants to hang on to listen to the show, so let's find out. Is this a buddy?
Who, here?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Oh, sorry, there was a little reverb or whatever you would call. Let me tell you something real quick here. I'm gonna comment on a couple things here what Ash was trying to tell you. And I think he wasn't trying to toot his own horn, bro. Because let me tell you about these line den tryouts. When you got Navy SEALs coming in straight out of the program, and I'm not going to say falling like flies during the process, but basically that's what some of them did. I know, no disrespect to the Navy SEAL because I love them. But you've got people like that falling down during these tryouts, and you got a man, Ash Bowman, not only doing it once but twice. Come on, bro. You got to be kidding me. You want to talk about a warrior? See, he's trying to, you know, and I don't blame him. He doesn't want to toot his own horn. But you guys out there, maybe you just don't understand. These tryouts were brutal, and I think you were trying to allude to that fact, Bob. These tryouts were brutal. I've got inside information. And, hey, I've talked to enough people that have fallen down during them, and I've talked to a couple that happened to make it through. But I can only name one that made it through twice, and it's this guy. Now, you want to talk about Legends of MMA Hall of Fame? No problem, because this is the true MMA Hall of Fame. And you hear guys, you know, with the name Mezger, of course, Shamrock, Tito, Boss, Jerry, Couture. I can go on and on. Javier Mendez, Eric Paulson, Frank, Mark Coleman, Hoist. And don't forget the Beast, Dan Severn. You want to talk about the real MMA Hall of Fame? There it is, guy. Now, you're winding me up here. What you can also do, and I know this firsthand, Ash actually makes MMA Hall of Fame, Legends of MMA Hall of Fame rings. And I think, and he can correct me on this, I think they just came out with a new pendant for maybe a necklace. If I'm mistaken, let me know. But basically, you go on, you find him on Facebook. He's got the coolest shirts in the business. He's got the real MMA Hall of Fame. And on top of everything else, he's been there. He's not one of these guys, these fans that have created things. He is a fighter. He's always been a fighter. He just didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to brag too much. I understand that. But he's a warrior, bro. He's always been one. And when he put together this Legends of MMA Hall of Fame, he did it right. And he did it right the first time. A lot of these guys, they're out there searching, trying to be like him, trying to emulate his Hall of Fame. They can't. He's been there. He's in with the dogs, so to speak. He's been in the cage more times than he's even told you about. So,
now, Ash, do you want
advice?
To respond to
Go ahead, Ash. Ash, tell them about the rings that I've alluded to and the pendant, and correct me if it's not a pendant.
Yes, you're correct. There's several things. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Yes, we have championship rings that are actually being created. I talked to the manufacturer in Detroit, Michigan. They're Terry Berry. And
go ahead.
They make championship rings for a lot of the NBA guys and Harvard and Princeton alumni. And they're also the ones that are responsible for the Legends of MMA official ring. And they're in white golds. They're going to be surrounded in 14 black diamonds and rubies. Each inductee will be getting their very own personalized ring and a matching corresponding pendant, again, made in white gold or platinum. And we also have belt buckles that are coming out and cufflinks, too.
Right, and don't forget the shirts.
Oh, absolutely. Every one of the inductees have their own shirt and jersey, and they're numbered. Everybody has their own number. So, for example, Hoist Gracie is 1, Ken Shamrock is 0-2, Dan Severn's 0-3, and so forth, based upon their induction order of induction into the Hall of Fame. So we are going to be launching our online store here shortly, within the next 45 days, we're hoping.
Right.
So people can actually go on to legendsofmma.com. You can select varied merchandise, whether it's a poster or a picture or a signed autograph, whatever it is. You see something you like, you click on it, you load it into your shopping cart, you click out, you know, and you make your process and your transaction, and you're good to go. You receive your product, you're happy. And these are, again, hopefully we're going to try and market everything towards bigger stores later on throughout the next year, like Spencer's and so on and so forth.
Exactly. Right. And let me tell you this. You're talking about quality product. You're not talking about when he does his rings or his pendants and especially his shirts, he uses top-of-the-line stuff. This isn't something that's going to fall apart in a year or two. This is good stuff. And let me tell you one thing real quick. Dan the Beast Severn was at DFW Airport. He had a 7:30 flight today heading back home. He's been in the DFW area for about a week. And when I spoke to him tonight, when this man's name came up, Ash, he spoke so highly of him, and he has so much respect for him. And so, what does that tell you, bro? That tells me when a man like Dan Severn has respect for a man like this, then he is the real deal. He is the total package. And everything that he's telling you is true. And go on his Facebook, check it out. You will be thoroughly impressed. This man has done it right. That's the difference. He's done it right. He didn't rush into anything. He didn't, you know, just throw it up there, whatever. He's taken his time and done it correctly. And all of these guys, Couture, Shamrocks, both of them, Guy, Beast, they all respect him. And that tells you everything you need to know. And I tell you one thing. I could not be more impressed by this guy as a person and, hey, as a fighter. That's the bottom line because he's been in the cage. That's the difference.
And
he knows it. He just can't say it. It would sound a certain way if he were to tell you what I'm telling you. He's the real deal. He's been there. He is a fighter. He's a warrior, bro.
The fact that he has these people vouching and fully supportive of his efforts, again, speaks volumes. Thanks. We got to go to another call. Can you just give us your name and town that you're calling from?
Yeah, hey. Uh-huh. Yeah, hey, it's Gary.
No, nice try. Thanks a lot, brother. I appreciate the call.
Thanks,
all right, we're going to go. Take care, brother. We're going to go to another caller here, Ash, and then we got a few minutes, and we got to get to our next guest. All right, this is a caller on Skype calling. You're on the air with Bob Parson and Ash Bauman.
Just a quick comment to say this is some great fucking old school talk. I love it, man. I love hearing about the fucking old school, man. Just keep on going. Lions Den, bro.
Yeah.
I love it. Thanks for everything.
Well, thank you. All right, well, we're going to leave him on hold. He'll probably wind up listening. But, yeah, the first caller was absolutely correct. I mean, the fact that we were supposed to have Severn on, and I knew that Severn was traveling today, and Dan is probably going to be on. And I'm sure once we have Dan on, we're going to ask him about, your Hall of Fame and everything, his involvement. And didn't you recently record a video of the Beast? If I'm not mistaken, maybe it was from a few years ago, but it looked fairly recent where he was doing these almost flips on the mat and everything, and I think he was promoting a new T-shirt or something. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, Dan was at his gym, I believe, a week or two ago, and he was doing some tumbling, which is, just a fancy word for rolling, if you will. Like cartwheels and like that, but it actually is, an exercise that's used to condition your joints and muscles and stuff for wrestling. So he's doing these backflips and stuff, and as he's doing it, he's wearing his Legends of MMA official Dan Severn T-shirt. And at the end of the it's about a 20-second clip, but it's an awesome little introduction for Dan Severn. It shows his humor, and it shows, of course, Dan Severn's jersey. So the fact that Dan took his time out of his day and made a little short clip to help promote the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame and me was an absolute personal. I personally couldn't thank him enough. I mean, that was an absolute. I mean, that shows you what kind of person Dan Severn is. He didn't have to do that. He has a ton of other things that are probably 100 times more important. He could have been doing, but he took the time out of his day to do that for me and the Legends of MMA. And I thought that was just very, very commendable.
Well, listen, Ash, we'd love to, if possible, have you on in the future, because we didn't even get to ask you a lot of the questions pertaining to your own career. So I'm hoping maybe in the next few weeks or so we can have you back on the program so we can really explore in depth your career and everything else. We're going to kind of wrap it up here, but would you just give people at home any information pertaining to, we mentioned the website repeatedly, legendsofmma.com. Is there anywhere else you want to direct people online?
Yeah, I mean, basically, if you guys get on Facebook, and I think everyone's on Facebook nowadays, or Twitter, or Instagram, or some type of social media, but I'm predominantly on Facebook a lot right now. I'm still learning the ins and outs of Twitter and all that stuff, but look up Ash Bowman on Facebook, or look up Legends of MMA on Facebook. I will personally answer any messages or any correspondence to you. And also, you can try ashbowman.com. My website as well has a few little links on there for the legendsofmma.com.net, and also the Mixed Martial Arts Hall of Fame.com. It's a little bit long, but these are all pretty much linked together. And in about, I'd say, in the next 30 to 45 days, tentatively, we're looking at launching our online stores. So fans and people can go out there and support not just me, but you're supporting the athletes in the Hall of Fame itself by purchasing merchandise and things of that nature, and you're just giving back, basically into the sport is all it is, you know what I mean? So help everyone out and support, and if I could do anything, I will personally see to it that I message everyone back myself.
Well, listen, we're on board. It's a very, very important venture you've got going on here. It's great to see you're getting support from so many key figures in the sport of MMA, and it's been an honor having you on the program here. And again, we want to reach out to you in the past, in the future, to try to get you back on the show. Ash, thanks again for coming on Carson's Corner, my friend.
Well, thank you guys, and Bob, and you guys, let me tell you something. First and foremost, I really appreciate the fact that you guys had me on tonight as a guest, and the topic of discussion was the MMA Hall of Fame, and it's something that's very passionate for me, and I'm hoping you guys and the fans will see I believe in it, and hopefully my passion will be apparent as time goes on. So I thank you guys again, and I'll look forward to being a guest in the future.
Thank you so much, Ash. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys again. I really had a great time. Thank you all.
Take care. All right, that was Ash Bowman here on Carson's Corner. Again, visit the website, legendsofmma.com, and we'll have him on in the future to go more in depth here. It's hard to believe that an hour almost flew by. But having said that, let's go to our next guest here. He's been on the hold for a while. We really appreciate that. We're switching things a bit here now as veteran boxer Tracy Sneed joins us to promote his upcoming fight. Tracy has an outstanding record at 27-2 with 21 knockouts, and he's been in the game long enough to seen and done a lot of things. Tracy, welcome to Carson's Corner. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Carson. Hey, man, I appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's get straight to it. You're facing George Comanche, boy. I don't even want to try to pronounce his last name. I'm so bad with last names, but Tadana Jampu or something of that nature. It's probably butchered it.
Yeah. Actually, his name is George Tadanapa, and his nickname is, what they call him, Comanche Boy. He got a record, I guess, I think it's 33-1, and I think 24 knockouts. He's a good fighter.
Yeah, this is an exciting fight. This is this weekend, Saturday night, at the Remington Park in Oklahoma City. This weekend has some UFC action also in Oklahoma, but we want to give people an idea of what else is going on in the combat sports in case they're looking for something different. Comanche Boy is another fighter with, again, a solid record, as you alluded to. He's 33-1-2, and he's regarded as being a durable puncher, and he's very popular in Oklahoma. So it sounds like a good matchup just in terms of skills.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I think it's I think it's a mover for me. You know, I'm looking at knocking him out. I'm looking at putting myself back in the top 10, and I think I just wrapped it up. Just saying that, really, that's what it is. I'm thinking about knocking him out in this fight. I think he's a great guy. He got a great record, and because of his record, I think that it helped me. I think they helped me get back in the top 10. I was, I don't know, about 4 years ago, of course, I haven't fought in about 4 years, but I'm formerly ranked number two by the WBO in the world. But, you know, I got sick. I got sick with, excuse me, I'm talking too fast. Yeah, I got sick with sugar diabetes, and that kind of slowed my game up, you know what I'm saying? You know, I got real sick. I had to go get my sugar down, and, you know, and then, of course, I had to get my glucose down, and now that I'm stable, you know, now that my sugar's stable, and now that my glucose stable, you know, yeah, I think I'm ready to come on out and, you know, beat this guy up, and then, of course, I'm looking at Canelo, and I'm looking at Cotto, which is some really, 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 really big names. They got, of course, they got big records, and they've been in the game a long time too. But I'm looking at those for big paydays, and this is one of the guys that I just got to go through to get there. And so we're taking this guy on, and hopefully
and
we'll
you look to
knock
be great
him out there.
You posted some pictures of yourself. You look to be in great shape. And I want to give people at home a sense of because I'm hearing that there's also a bit of a personal grudge match here, at least on one side. Let's give people at home a sense of why you and Comanche Boy have beef. Let me start by asking, you know, giving his side of the story, then you can respond. He claims that you two fought on the same show in 2004. And then at the time, you helped him out and gave him some pointers. No beef started off with that. However, he then claims that you left him an angry phone message stating that you had heard he'd been telling people he could beat you and threatening, quote, to whip his ass. Then reportedly afterwards, he called you back and you had a verbal confrontation on the phone. Pick it up there first, Tracy. What happened with you and Comanche Boy? And please go into as much detail as you'd like.
Yeah, really, I don't really recall all that. I mean, I have said on Facebook a lot that I kick his ass, and
right.
You know, but I'm not. Don't get me wrong, it's business with me. I've been in this game for a long time, and I'm trying to sell tickets. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm gonna kick his ass. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. So it is what it is. But no, I didn't. I don't even remember calling him, but maybe I did call him. I have called a lot of people, but I think that sounds like the Darren Humphrey. Of course, me and Darren Humphreys got into it, too. He's also another fighter. Of course, we're cool now, and I'll talk to him. And me and Comanche Boy, maybe we'll be cool after this fight. I'm not really mad at him. He's at my weight class, and he has a great record in his business. I'd have to chop his head off if he wasn't in my weight class, and he didn't have a great record. I'd just be shaking his hands and doing what I do. But, you know, it is what it is, of course. You know what I'm saying? I need his record, and he needs my record to even get any farther than he is, because I got a great record. I'm formerly ranked number two in the world. So if he beat me, it's kind of good for him. And if I beat him, then it's great for me, you know what I'm saying? And that's kind of the plan. But as far as beefing with the guy, you know what I'm saying? Man, I'm not mad at him. Of course, it's business. I think he's mad at me. I did read some of the stuff on the Facebook, and I read some other stuff on the Internet where he said that I did all that stuff. I called him and cussed him out and all. Shit, I don't even remember that. That's why I really can't jump on it. I just remember saying stuff on the Facebook trying to get him to fight me. Calling him, you know, I told him, tell him that I kick his ass and told him that I'm the real champion and you know, that's it's just business. It's strictly business. I don't mean to be a hard ass, but in order to get that fight sometimes you gotta go talk shit, you know, and that's what I needed to do. Because I needed that fight, and that's why I did that. But I like Comanche Boy. He's a strong fighter. He's a great fighter. He's going to be rough. He's going to be tough for me to beat. And you know what? I expect that. I expected that before I even started talking shit. But I think the fans will get a great fight. You know, I'm coming to chop his head off. He's coming to not let me chop his head off. He said on the Internet he's going to knock me out. So obviously he's coming to do something. He's coming to beat me up some way too. And I expect him to do that. I don't expect him to sit there and let me beat him up. But that's pretty much the game of boxing. That's why it's the art. Up in MMA, and I love MMA too, you know, but you can grab each other and choke each other out. And,
right.
You know, and just the stronger man is up in MMA kind of wins. But in boxing, it's about technique. Because you can have a muscled-up guy that's very strong, and you can have a skinny guy that ain't very muscled-up or strong at all, but the skinny guy ends up knocking out the big guy because it's about art. It's about where you hit him at. It's about the angles you use and the whole nine. I mean, don't get me wrong, cause I'm not saying anything about MMA. I love MMA. You know, that's a great sport. I'm just giving a difference up in that. But, yeah, but this guy here, you know, Comanche Boy, I don't have beef with him. I am going to fight him hard. I'm ready. I'm in shape. I want his title. I want his record. And if I have to take his head off to get it, then fuck it. I mean, excuse my language. We're on the radio.
No, you're good. We're online, brother.
Yeah.
It's all good. I want to talk about Comanche as an opponent here. Let's talk about how you regard him as an opponent. He certainly has a good record, very good record,
yeah.
and clearly hits hard. But when he fought Delvin Rodriguez, probably his highest profile fight, the commentators criticized him for primarily fighting at Native American casinos against opponents not on his level. They pretty clearly said he was a popular local fighter who had been somewhat protected over the years because he draws a good crowd and people want to see him fight. Do you have any sense of that from looking at his record and his fights?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's the case. But, I think that's good management, too. I think Floyd Mayweather, if you look at his record, of course,
yeah.
He's fighting people right now that, that's good. And, of course, because Floyd's going out. But throughout his whole career, if you look at it, Floyd Mayweather, all his fights have been picked. And that's good management. So, kind of with this guy as well, of course, I think his fights have been picked. I think a lot of my fights have been picked. And that's kind of protecting your fight instead of just putting them out there and them get beat up. But there comes a time when your fighter has to fight. Like Floyd Mayweather, he has had to fight some crushing fights, like against Canelo. He had to fight, I don't know, against that last guy he just fought that was hitting him on the back of his head that other people thought that he kind of won. I really thought Floyd beat that guy real easy, I looked at the fight again. At first I thought the guy kind of beat Floyd or his close, but after I looked at the tape again, I seen Floyd just punished him. He took him apart. But, I'm going back to answer your question. Yeah, I think a lot of his fights has been picked, but I think a lot of my fights has been picked. And I think that's good management. I think that's what you should do with a fighter if you want to see him make it into that top 10. But eventually, once he gets into the top 10 or whatever, he's going to have to fight somebody. But that's the experience that you have to get in there. But Comanche Boy is a strong fighter. I don't underestimate him, and he can punch, and he is mad. And that can work for him, and that can work against him. If he's not smart and he's mad, then I'm going to crush him. But if he's smart and he's mad, then he can give me a good fight. But he needs to understand that, and I'm with it.
Let me ask you, because, like we said earlier, you were giving him tips in the past. So you must be, I would imagine you'd be pretty far ahead of him in the technical sense. Is this going to be a classic boxer versus puncher matchup? I mean, obviously you hit pretty hard yourself. How do you think it's going to turn out?
I think you're going to have all that, I do believe I'm on way different levels than he on. He thinks he's on another level, which he said that on Facebook, I'm not on his level, and I laughed, ha, 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 again, on the air. That was funny as shit. But, I think I'm on a way different level. I think he will definitely go to school, Rodriguez kind of took him to school, but to keep it real, Rodriguez is a lightweight, I don't know, what is he, 147-pounder? And he kind of got with Comanche Boy, I think Rodriguez is okay, but he ain't on my level. I say that loud and clear. He know it, too. And, if he wants to get one, we get one, too. But Rodriguez is kind of light enough in the pants. And he kind of ate, some Comanche Boy up. And that's because he's on a whole other level. He took him to school. And I think that's kind of what happened. I got the power he got. So regardless of how much power he got, if he hit me hard, I'm going to hit him back hard. Respect will be given both ways because I got just as much power or more. Actually, I think mine is way more than his. But, I think my school level, I think my level of boxing is a lot more than his. I think I would take him to school, definitely.
You're both from Oklahoma, but is one of you or more is a local favorite than the other in this matchup? Who's closer to their home turf, do you think, going into this fight?
I'm probably the more local favorite. I would say I'm the more local favorite, I'm the one, I don't know. Of course, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not. That's just my opinion. But I've always thought I was more of a local favorite than he is, which don't get me wrong, because he got a lot of fans, but I'm in Oklahoma City. This is where I'm from. He's from Lawton, Oklahoma. I'm from Chandler, Oklahoma, but I've lived in Oklahoma City, and, that's pretty much where I'm from. It's like a suburb of Edmond or Oklahoma City, Chandler is. So this is my
turf. Does that play into your mind at all? Do you take into account the possibility of, even if you weren't the hometown favorite, George is a popular guy, and that could create possible judging bias. Does that enter into the mind at all, or at this point,
No, definitely. I could go to Lawton and do the same thing. It wouldn't matter if everybody in there is for George and everybody's against me. That's the energy that I'll use to knock him out. It doesn't matter. It's like this right here. I'm going to use the energy in that crowd. If they're against me, I'm going to use it to knock him out. If they're for me, I'm going to use it to knock him out. You need to know I'm looking for the knockout, regardless. And he's got about 3-4 days. What is it? 5 days? Yeah, Saturday. Yeah, this is Monday.
Yeah.
He's got a little, to think about it, but same thing going to come out. Same thing going to happen.
I want to read you some of his quotes because I think these will get you fired up. You've seen him before, but I'll ask you to respond to him. Tracy Snead is not on my level. He's never fought anybody like me. I'm going to put him on back into permanent retirement. Come round one, he's going to know and he's going to go down. And then he says he calls you a lazy fighter because you fought a guy he beat in round one over 5 rounds. What do you say to that accusation of laziness? I mean, is this a case of a guy who likes to knock out opponents and wow his friends, not fully appreciating a real technician's work?
He's a tough opponent. He's a guy that wants to believe in all that you just said, you know, and that's what he thinks in his mind until he gets in there and in that ring, and you know, and it's a totally different story. Of course, the guy he's talking about, he knocked out in the first round, and I think it took me. I think he said 5, but I knocked that same guy out. His name is Michael Jackson. I knocked him out in 3 rounds. He knocked him out in 1 round. But the reason why he knocked him out in 1 round is because I crushed him so bad in up in those 3 rounds that everybody knocked him out. It ain't just him. I broke him up so bad that every time he fought, after he fought me, he got knocked out. So I wouldn't be talking about that if I was Comanche. Well, I'd be kind of quiet about that one. But, and then all the other shit talking about not on his level. That's a joke, man. That's a joke. Everybody know that. I mean, anybody in the fighting world that know me, you know what I'm saying? I've trained in Las Vegas pretty much all my life. I'm trained by Tyrone Boone. I've been trained by Bowser Edwards. I've been trained by Riddick Bowe. I've trained with Mike Tyson. I've been trained by Roger Mayweather. I've trained with Floyd Mayweather. I've knocked out Ishae Smith, which was a junior middleweight IBF world champion. You know, I've trained with Jesse Brinkley's sparring partner. I've trained with Sean Tuas. His name is Sean Tua, Coffee Swan partner, and it goes on. I mean, you can name them and name them and keep on. And all those legendary fighters that you could name, if you name my name, they don't know me. You know what I'm saying? From Riddick Bowe to Floyd Mayweather to Tracy Snead, nobody but people right here in Oklahoma know Comanche Boy.
You know. All right, before we wrap it up here, let's remind people this fight is going to take place this weekend, Saturday, in Oklahoma City at Remington Park. Tracy, hopefully you're going to make good on your promise and whip his ass for being disrespectful. Everyone loves, you know, to see an ass whipping. You know,
absolutely.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about is your background in the sport. I mean, you've been around boxing for a very long time, and you probably have some wild stories. What sort of stories and things stick out to you that have happened over the years? I mean, I appreciate the fact that I've asking you pretty wide-ranging questions there, but,
right.
Just before we wrap it up, anything that kind of sticks out in your boxing career over the years?
I don't know, you know what I'm saying? I think just meeting all the great people, having the fans that I have, you know what I'm saying, being in Las Vegas, those kind of things when people know who I am, that's kind of shocking to me. And just meeting, you know what I'm saying, meeting like your Mike Tyson, hanging out with them, and your Riddick Bowe and your Floyd Mayweather, you know, and actually getting to train with them. That's probably the most exciting thing that I've actually, you know, done in boxing, you know, other than, you know, as far as fighting and knocking out people. Well, I've done that from the day one, so that doesn't excite me. You know, that's just fighting. But, you know what I'm saying, but meeting people, you know what I'm saying, and just getting to hang out with people and getting to get on them other levels. That's what I enjoy. And then I got a huge fan base that supports me. That I love, you know, and they always, you know, and always got my back, always pumping me up. So, you know,
well,
those
Tracy,
things like that is probably the most exciting thing for me in fighting. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's great to have a veteran of boxing such as yourself on the show. Like I said, you have a long history in the sport, and it would be an honor for us to get a chance to talk to you again in the future. Best of luck on your fight coming up on August 23rd in Oklahoma City, and hopefully we'll have you on the show in the future when you're fighting again another top opponent on the way to a championship.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you having me on the show. And anytime I can be on your show, let me know, and I'll wait in line anytime. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Tracy. Take care, brother.
Thank you.
Good luck. All right, very, very good. Tracy Snead here on Carson's Corner. Hopefully we'll have him on in the future. We're going to keep tabs on his fight coming up on the 23rd, which is, I guess, this Friday? Yeah, this Saturday, actually. Wow, this summer's going by so fast. Isn't it ridiculous? All right, without further ado, here is my interview or update with Dan Quinn. It's going to last till about 10:05 or 10:06, Okay, and I just want to make one more announcement here before we go to our Dan Quinn update. Carson's Corner is now going to be on fightsport.net. Yes, that is absolutely correct. The legendary fightsport.net, very, very important site in the MMA community, a site that has been really ostracized by the elites. It's associated with trolling, and there's no question that there are Fight Sport trolls on the forums there. There's sort of an anything-goes mentality on Fight Sport, and Carson's Corner has had a long history with Fight Sport, as has Eddie Goldman, the host of the No Holds Barred show. Eddie used to post on there back in the day. I mean, I think before there was even an underground forum, if I'm not mistaken, and Lorenzo and Dana used to post on there, and the story has it that somebody, Tape Lord, was posting things about Anthony Fertitta Sr., and Dana called up Eddie ranting and raving and accusing Eddie of posting things revealing about Anthony Fertitta Sr., and Dana said, leave the old man out of it and everything like that. And Eddie never posted. Eddie, you know, posted as himself. He didn't post under a false name. And so just goes to show you some of the history of Fight Sport. So our shows and our old shows are going to be on Fight Sport. What better place to host Carson's Corner? And by the way, Eddie just started posting No Holds Barred on there as well. So check out Eddie Goldman's latest show, No Holds Barred, with catch wrestler Josh Barnett. All right, here is Dan Quinn, straight out of jail, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Bob Carson, and you?
Good, good, good. We're recording now, brother.
Fantastic. Well, Bob, I don't know where to start. What's the biggest news? Dan Quinn and Crazy Joe are back together. And so, you know, the family that we had started to establish, you know, he's like my uncle, and his daughter is like my sister. That's not shattered. That's going to be reforged. Or that someone came up and said to me, the only reason why you're getting this is because we saw you play at Notre Dame and we know what you gave up. But there's a federal sting going on in the Sacramento and surrounding areas, and it's not stinging the poor people, Bob Carson. It's stinging the rich, okay? That's why like Senator Yee and all these people starting to go down. Tell you what, I guess Obama is putting the feds in town, and you know what? All the rich people that are shady, illegal criminals, okay, and have been getting away with it for a long time, it sounds like it's going to be like a house of cards. It's all going to come crashing down here pretty soon, Bob Carson. Isn't that a fantastic fucking story coming from my lips to the ears of somebody who is a definite liberal and wants the conservatives to fall by the wayside?
Yes.
Okay? Yeah, great, 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 great news. Okay? Great news. Dan Quinn, when he was locked up, started to the Bruno Groening circle of friends. Bruno Groening works, Bob. Oh, my God. My mom was sending me these Bruno Groening pictures and stories about people, you know, praying to Bruno Groening. Are you familiar with who Bruno Groening is, Bob?
No.
Okay, Bruno Groening is like a mystic, okay? He's a healer at a journey in the late 40s, early 50s, and did really, really big things. And so I started, you know, the power of thought, the power of positive thought, paying it forward and what's returned in your hand. You've heard of that concept, correct?
Yes.
Okay, well, Bob, I was praying every day that I was in there, you know, for world peace, to stop world hunger, yada, yada, and also that my Social Security didn't stop, and then when I was released, I would have a big bank account so I could actually do some things and get stevia famous. And guess what, Bob? When I got released, I had $17,000 in the bank, and what I've done with that since then, I bought my mom's car. She gave me a screaming deal, okay? I had to pay it off for $1,500, give her $2,000 for a down payment on a new car, and there was either $10,000 or $11,000 equity in the car that I got. That's a good deal, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'll tell you what, Bob. I can barely hear you. Can you hear the noise in the background?
It's not too bad. I can hear you loud and clear, Dan.
Okay. So anyway, I get out. And I'm feeling like I'm on cloud nine, euphoric. You know, I've been locked up for 2 years, now I'm free. And now I have $17,000 in the bank. And so we went on a one-day shopping spree, and what I told people, I said, look, why don't we just pretend that I didn't quit football? Okay, Bob, have you confirmed through any other sources besides myself or my mom that I was a first-round draft choice at Notre Dame or would have been a first-round draft choice at Notre Dame if I didn't quit football? Have you confirmed that?
It's not that I can remember, no.
Oh, okay, well, you know what? I mean, it's like this. I had pro scouts coming up to me telling me, you know what, kid, if you don't get hurt, you're for sure first-round draft pick, yada, yada, yada. The fact that Frank Stamps, University of Notre Dame, second-round draft pick, he had a long career in the NFL. He did real good, man. And you know what? I made a mistake, Frank. I chose you to be an embassy, an enemy, okay, a focal point of my anger, instead of saying, hey, you know what? If Hulse is going to fuck me over, he's going to have to give it to somebody. So that somebody that actually took up the reins did pretty good. You know what I'm saying, Bob? I mean, don't you think it's better for whoever was given my job to make it to the pros and do fairly well than to be a bust?
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes sense, right? So fact is, if Frank Stamps was a second-round draft choice and I could catch Tim Brown from behind and cover all those black millionaire running backs man for man, you know what? Good chance I would have been the first-round draft pick. And I guarantee you, Bob, if I would have been a first-round draft pick back then, I would have been an egotistical asshole. People would have liked me, okay, for sure, because don't people generally in football like guys that are savage, okay? They don't really give a fuck what kind of person they are, just so long as you're a savage beast. Isn't that right?
Yep.
Okay? Well, I'll tell you what, Bob. I've gone on a... Oh, Bob Carson, guaranteed. Let me get back to it. My son, Ryan Quinn, is going to be a world champ, Bob. Going to be a world champ. He was strong enough to play the defensive line as a freshman. He was fast enough to play wide receiver as a senior. And guess what? He don't want to play football anymore, Bob. He wants to become a world champ cage fighter. Oh, and he's strong as fuck, Bob. Strong. I mean, he has my genes.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, Bob, both my sons are special. They're gifted. Maybe not so much in the classroom, but in every other aspect that really means something. And they got jumped the other day. You know they got jumped by, Bob?
Wow.
They got jumped by a couple of black kids from the Thomas, okay, who got their asses beat the first time around and didn't want to fucking give them a fair chance the next time. You feel me? What do you think, Bob? White boys getting jumped by black guys? That doesn't happen too often, except if it's for money and it's involving an ass-whipping, does it?
True.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. I'll tell you what. Yeah, I'm going to train Scott Hands of Steel Smith. I'm going to train the son better than I trained you. And it's like this, Scotty. What you should do is get some of your friends that know ground to teach my son ground. I'm going to ask Jamie Hara to put his 2 cents in, and I'm going to build a world champ. And I guarantee you, I tried to steer him away from it. Everybody in the family didn't want him to do it, but what are they going to do? I tried to steer him away from football, too. So, point is, Bob, I have a little money in the bank, I have a lot of stevia, and I have people that are sick that are getting on board. And now here's the cowbell. This is a big story. My dad is dying of cancer, Bob.
Wow.
Yeah, my dad is dying of cancer. And fact is, if he listens to Dan Quinn and drinks stevia water, he's going to be 100% cured, just like Priscilla did. Mike Gonzalez. Tell you what, Mike Gonzalez, this is a fact. I took it easy on you every time we sparred. Do you have the first round of that time? Bob, you know Mad Mike Gonzalez from Carnage? You know what I'm talking about, correct?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. He gives me a text, emergency. I need sparring because he's going to fight. I can't remember this dude's name, but he's cool as fuck. He's a tattoo artist. His wife is beautiful, and he's the champ now, I think. Anyways, Mike was beating everybody up in sparring, beating them up, so they didn't want to spar with him anymore. So he texts me, emergency, come and pretend to be Mark Matthews is who it is, right? What's up, Mark? You know what? I don't think you can hang with me, homeboy. I think I'm too big and too strong. Anyhow, beside the point, that's, I told you this story tonight, that I had been working out on that new bag, and I fucking ripped into it, and I got, oh, man, I tell you what, I got tennis elbow. What do they call that? What do they call tennis elbow?
Not tendonitis?
Yeah, oh, I got tendonitis in my elbows so severely that I could hardly even move. So what I had to do to go spar Mike Gonzalez, I had to take a hot shower, and this is in the summertime, okay? Took a hot shower, kept the door shut, kept the hot steamy fog in there, and then I got dressed up in like winter, like downhill skiing shit, you know, to keep my warmth. I drove over and sparred Mike, and I'll tell you what, in the first round, homie, I hit Mike with an overhand right hand. Does that sound kind of retarded? I hit him with a lead right and put Mike on queer street to where I had to turn my back. And Mike, I'll tell you what, fact not fiction, homeboy, if it's a fight, it's over. It's done. I knock you out, okay? In fact, not fiction, you turning your back on Priscilla for whatever fucking form, fashion, or reason to the point where Riley Freisack don't want to talk to you anymore. You know what? The fact that he was pretending to butt fuck me. We were sparring, homeboy, and I was in pain, and I turned around and I grabbed the top of the cage to start stretching out. And you know who's behind me pretending to butt fuck me? Is Mike Gonzalez. Now, is that something that a friend will do, Bob? What do you think? Do friends
no.
do that or what?
No.
You okay? Yeah. So this Mike Gonzalez. I got a email from my mom when I'm in jail. Fantastic news. Priscilla's cured stage 4 cancer. 8 exclamation marks because Priscilla had stage 4 cancer. She was going to chemotherapy, and she decided to use stevia a little bit, and stevia flushed her system, flushed the cancer out of her body, and then she got a little bucky, okay, a little overconfident or something, and stopped taking stevia. Cancer came back in mass, with a vengeance, and that beautiful woman is dead. And
wow.
You know what? It's like this, Mike Gonzalez, fact. What I will do for Priscilla's sons is if they ever want to get into cage fighting, I will give them the same treatment that I gave Scott Smith, that took Scott from what his family. Did I tell you this before, Bob? That Scott's brother told me they were at a family barbecue, and we're talking about Scott Hands of Steel, Dana White, and UFC Nation out there, and they're at their family barbecue, and they're talking. They're like, you know what? Before Scotty met Dan, he was just a ground-and-pound guy. Bob, how many ground-and-pound guys are there in the UFC?
Thousands.
Thousands. I mean, isn't that like, that ain't shit, ground-and-pound. Who cares? Everybody's
right.
Ground-and-pound, right? And they said after Scotty met Dan, he fell in love with his hands, okay? Now, I'm not going to lie. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make my son learn defense, okay? He's going to not throw any punches. He's not going to go in there and spar. I'm going to throw punches at him. He's going to learn how to fucking defend the jab. He's going to learn how to defend the 1-2. He's going to learn how to defend combinations. He's going to get to the point where he's basically like me against Harry Gopal, not giving a fuck, okay, blocking most of that shit. And Bob, can you tell when I sat down against Harry Gopal, did you think I was hurt or did you think I was just sitting down because I was like, fuck this, man? It's actually 3 minutes and 20 seconds of a 3-minute round, and I'm through. I'm not fucking getting paid to, you know, get killed for free. You feel me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's how it's done. We're going to make some videos about all that shit, and my son's going to come out, and he's going to blow doors on people. Okay, he's going to have hands. He's going to be able to spot up John Jones. He's not going to be as big as you, John Jones, but you're his hero. Oh, yeah, he likes you a lot, man, because you are a talented fighter, and he's got talent. He's got his dad's genes. You know what? 6.5 sacks in the 86 spring game. Coaches pro scouts coming up to me and saying, you know what, you're going to be a first-round draft pick. Me catching Tim Brown from behind in the scrimmage. Me covering Alan Pinkett and Ricky Waters man-for-man in practice and shutting him down. Tony Rice on Facebook. Did you read that article or that quote that Tony Rice wrote, Bob, where it says, Dan Quinn, the only player that I feared on the field, ran like Carl Lewis and hit like a Mack truck. Did you see that?
Yeah. When was that?
That was like 2 years ago. That was before I got locked up, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know where it's at. And I don't know where Tony Rice is at. I'll tell you what,
Yeah, Dan, let me ask you a question. Now, where are you at? Explain to the audience. You know, you got your release last week. You got reunited with Kalani and everything.
I got my release, got reunited with Kalani, and then my mom gives me a screaming deal on her car. I don't want to say what kind of car it is because I don't want to have these fucking knuckleheads out there that don't know how cool I am talking shit and trying to find me, right?
Yeah.
So she gives me a screaming deal on the car, and I pay it, and so now I own this car. But she won't let me drive the car right at first because I don't have a valid license. Okay? So when I have a valid license, she won't let me drive the car, Bob, because I don't have insurance. Okay? So when I have insurance, she won't let me drive the car because she says that I'm drunk on weed. All right? And I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. Beep. Take me home. I'm done. You know, I'm good. We'll just deal with this tomorrow. And so you know what my mom does? She says, you know what? I have an idea. If a doctor actually says that you are sober, okay, you can drive, a Kaiser doctor says that you're good to go, you can have the car tonight. And I'm like, fucking cool. You know what? Let's do. Let's sign up. So we go down to Kaiser. And I don't read what I sign, Bob, because I'm too fucking trusting. And guess what? I signed myself into a 72-hour motherfucking hold, homeboy. Straight up. Oh, and guess what? Here's what it says. It says right here. Hold on. It says, you were having manic symptoms. You were not sleeping. You thought you were an NFL player with $25 million in the bank. You were spending lots of money. You were agitated. You were unable to provide for your basic needs due to these symptoms. Everybody knows I said that I never was an NFL player, that I gleefully walked away from that shit because I would have had coaches fucking killed. Bob, if I'm an NFL player and I know people in the criminal underworld, how hard do you think it would be to hire a really, really good-looking tall girl to date one of these motherfuckers, to slip a Mickey into his drink? She books, she's gone, she's rich, and then dude wakes up in heaven or hell because we drove his car into a fucking telephone pole, into a tree, and it blew up and he burned up. How hard is that?
I don't think hard at all.
It wouldn't be hard at all, would it? You know, I knew what I was looking at. I knew that, you know, chances are I might get caught up sooner or later and be doing a life sentence, okay? Tell you what. I've been doing a life sentence metaphorically in many ways, shapes, and forms, okay? You know what I'm saying? Doing a life sentence. Me sitting on the sidelines, metaphorically in life, watching NFL football on TV, seeing guys that couldn't hold my fucking jockstrap, literally, millions of dollars. But you know what, Ron? At that point in time, I was actually becoming human. I was actually figuring out that, you know what, it doesn't matter if you're born with athletic ability, man, okay? You should actually use that as like a thing like, huh, you know, if I'm really talented and I'm an NFL guy and I'm making lots of money, I should spend my money around and help everybody who wasn't as fortunate as I was, you know what I'm saying? Help their lives out too, okay? And that's what I've been doing with my time and with my money. I've been helping people out.
Ask you. What happened with your release? Were you found guilty and sentenced to time served? Are there any conditions?
I'll tell you what. I can't talk about my case,
okay,
because the judge says that I can't talk about my case.
Okay.
But I can tell you this, that it will eventually get overturned completely. Okay, people will probably go to jail for perjuring themselves. I can tell you that. Big E, my nigga, my friend, homie, do you realize that Ernie's a, Bob Carson, you're aware that there are 5-star generals in the Army and the Navy has, what, admirals and, you know, yada yada. Are you aware that criminal, let's not start with the word criminal because it makes people sound bad when many, many, many times they're good, they were just born poor. Prison gangs on the street, the prison hierarchy, that they actually have generals, captains, 5-star generals, you know, lieutenants and stuff like that. Are you aware of that?
Sure.
Okay, well, guess what? Ernie's a 5-star general, brother. And guess what? We're going to do a video with a 5-star general who's black, a 5-star general who's white, and we're going to talk about keeping down the fucking violence on the streets, keeping it in a cage, not getting illegal, not getting arrested, not getting into the man, not being held back. And we're going to talk about some of the good things that we're going to do to make money legally and to help feed the hungry and to help people that need help, okay? Because most people that have money aren't doing anything but help themselves. What do you think?
Right.
That's it. goddamn straight. You know what I'm saying? I mean, how much money do you need, man, when you have millions in the bank? And you're not doing to help people that you grew up with. You know, you're not doing the things to help people that are starving right
yep.
in front of you.
It's the narrow self-interest pursuit of money does not benefit all. It hurts everybody.
It hurts everybody.
Exactly.
It
we're
hurts
a finite
everybody.
Planet. We have finite resources. And you know, they say we have a value system disorder where the negative attributes of society become positively rewarded in business ventures. That's why we reward people that hoard money. They're sick. They're evil people. Somebody else is good.
And you know what? Everybody that's listening to this right now that actually is either on the fence or, you know, actually likes staying clean, what you should do is ask your teacher, what does this mean? You put stevia in water and blend, and water triples in size. It vanishes. It turns into a white, bubbly soup. All right? I told you before, Bob, this beautiful blonde PhD in Roseville, she said, oh, that's a gas. It has to be split H2O. I'm like, cha-ching. You know, but see, I was more interested in selling her a cleaning machine that replaces vacuums. You saw that, Bob, right?
Yes.
The Patriot, how it works?
Yeah.
Okay, Bob. We should get some money together and start a new company that puts Kirby and puts Hoover and puts Eureka and puts that piece of shit Rainbow out of business forever, okay? Make machines that are just like Patriots and TriStars that cost between $1,000 and $3,000, depending, okay, on how much they can get out of you, that have 25-year warranties and will be the last machine you ever put your money into, the machine that makes it so it pulls all the dirt out of your home, so when you replace your carpet, there's no dirt underneath the fucking the nap.
And that is efficiency at work, Dan. That you selling a vacuum cleaner of that caliber is for the betterment of society because it promotes sustainability and efficiency.
Oh yeah. I'll tell you what. When I got a job selling, I first sold TriStars. TriStars are very good. The gentleman who makes the Patriot used to own the company or be the president of the one that makes the TriStars. Then he retired, started his own business. When I got that job, Bob, my ex-wife, my beautiful, my exquisitely fucking fine ex-wife, was pregnant with my first son. And I went to about 3 or 4 vacuum cleaner sales, and I'm like, what the fuck? You know, I'm not going to sell vacuums. And then I saw what Bob Donati was selling, you know, and he put some dirt in the carpet and used the vacuum to brush it underneath the top. You couldn't see it, and you ran a vacuum over and he thought it was gone, right? It was actually disappeared underneath the top of the carpet. And then Bob sucked 15 to 20 pounds of dirt, dust, and sand up with the TriStar, and then boom, he pulled up all that shit that was underneath the top of the carpet, and I was like, oh, I'm fucking sold. I said, even if I fucking, you know, I got to get one of these for my kid. I can't afford it right now. I ended up being the number 2 salesman in the world in May of 95. I sold 22 machines. If 2 of my deals hadn't been turned down in financing, I would have been an international sales champ. And I felt proud to sell that because it worked. It gave people a clean and healthy home, and it wasn't a miniature little toxic gas chamber, which vacuums are. And by the way, President Obama, I voted for you. I would vote for you again. And I hope to God that you actually see this quote-unquote mission through in the greater Sacramento area by putting all the people that are fucking scandalous behind bars, because that's how it is. There is so much graft and corruption in Sacramento County, it is not even funny. But, President Obama, if you ever see somebody pushing a vacuum around and they have a gas mask on, run the other way, sir. Now, they should have a gas mask on anyways, because that vacuum smell, that's actually toxic shit, toxic dust. Look up in the, I don't know if you ever Google search toxic dust, Bob, but that's what dust inside the American home is. Everything
Man,
that America makes.
Now?
What's up?
Where do you live now? Where are you staying now?
Where am I staying now? Well, I'm from right now, I'm in the loony bin, but tomorrow or the next day, I'm going to be back home,
okay.
And I'm going to be back with Crazy Joe. I'm going to be reunited. The Fargo Nation, know this, I never once disrespected you. Don't think I did. Took great pains not to disrespect you. I always loved Joe. Always did. Crazy Joe is fucking only crazy because he's going through it on both ends. The fucking government's trying to fuck him. You know, they're trying to keep him from making money. They're trying to make it hard. That's what they do. And so Joe and I had our little thing, and it was Jack Short. I called Jack Short up, and I said, look, Jack, you know what? Joe just fucking threatened me and everything, and I know it's probably nothing. But you know what? Just in case, and this is not a threat, Jack, okay? This is just a promise, all right? So let's get this handled, figure out what's going on. It's not a threat, Jack, but if someone were to come for me, Jack, I'm not fucking waiting around for number two, homeboy. I said, I know where you live, dog, you know? And I've already talked to my friends, you know? And let's not even use you, Jack, okay? Let's use somebody else as an example, okay? If somebody came for me and they missed, I would go to the source and we would snatch him up and we would put some electricity to him. We would put some whatever to him. We would get the address of every motherfucker that he knew. And you know what? We would go make house calls on everybody and go all the way to the top, straight up. I already had friends ready to do that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not someone to fuck around, homeboy. You know what? I'm a nice guy. I don't push people around. I don't start fights. And generally, and from here on out, I don't do anything illegal. But, you know, when you're talking about my life, okay, and how it affects my kids, that's some serious shit. And, you better keep it out of your mouth or you better be fucking ready to pay the price.
I hear you, Dan. I understand. Now, what happened with the that trailer that you and I stayed in? Does Joan still have that, or did she sell that, or?
No, that's mine. That's mine.
Okay.
That's mine. And actually, Crazy Joe's there now, and Joan says that she likes Crazy Joe. Go figure. Fucking everybody likes Crazy Joe. Crazy Joe's one of the best fucking dudes you'll ever meet, homie. Straight up. Awesome. One of the best dudes you'll ever meet. All right, and I guess my bathroom doesn't quite look the same, okay? It was cool for me. I took bathroom and took showers. Other people would have been like, this kind of looks a little scuzzy. And I guess it looks goddamn near brand new because they scrubbed the fuck out of it and are turning that place inside out, you know, with a cleaning quickness. You know what I'm saying?
When are you going to start releasing more videos? Because I gave you... You're going to be releasing videos on my YouTube channel. We're all very excited about that. When do you plan on doing that?
Well, hey, why don't you do us both a favor? Release this on your webpage or whatever that you do on Carson's Forum, and also put it up on the on my page.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, that's no problem. I'll put it up as we're going to do a live radio show tomorrow with Ash Bowman and Tracy Sneed. He's a cruiserweight fighter. You'd be interested in Tracy Sneed. He was in jail, and he's 27-2. He's a good prospect.
Hold on. Say all that again. There's a lot of noise here.
Tracy Sneed. He's a fighter at Oklahoma.
Hey, Steven. Please. Thank you.
So this will be, and then I'll put this on the YouTube channel, and then people can look forward to having the.
Hold on, Bob. Hold on. I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
I'm saying that I'm going to put this on the YouTube channel.
Cool. And ladies and gentlemen across America, I want you to all give a big, huge, whelm. That's a combination of welcome and whelm. A warm. Welcome and warm. Whelm. A warm welcome applause to Bob Carson. You want to know why? Because Bob Carson, on his own, lost 100 pounds of fat. On his own. Is that true, Bob?
That's absolutely true. And I got to get back on Stevia to lose 20 or 30 more. Because
technically, Dan,
I'm still slightly obese. I'm still slightly obese, and I got to move to the overweight category.
Okay, but isn't it true the fat's gone and the skin stayed?
Yes.
Okay, see, you know what? I would never wish anything bad on you, Bob. Always liked you. Thought you're a great guy. Still think you're a great guy. You're still welcome in my home anytime that you're in town, you know. But I was kind of hoping that the stevia, like, that you did take, did, like, kick something in gear and make it so it made it so your fat loss was normal. You lose fat, you keep the skin, people look like shit, and they try it forever and ever and ever. We're going to get you on stevia, and that skin is going to melt back to normal, okay, and you're going to look like a lean, fucking savage beast in incredible speed, and people are going to be like, oh, my God, Dan Quinn was right. You know, Bob Carson was right. That's, yes. That's how it is.
Well, we validated, Stevie has been validated many, many times. It's been almost empirically demonstrated, demonstrated to the public. Now, let me ask you, Dan, are you going to ever start training? Because you got out and you're a little heavy, but you said that you're going to probably get down to about...
Hold on, Bob. Say that again.
When you got out, you definitely put on weight in jail. You said that you're going to get to single-digit body fat within 5 or 6 weeks. Have you begun training yet?
I haven't had a chance because, you know, I got out, I started doing the stevia, I started losing some weight, and then I got locked up again in the loony bin. And, yes, I'm going to go down. Put it like this, Bob. When I was locked up, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I was doing 500 sumo squats, okay, with calf raises. And then on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, I was throwing 3,500 or 4,000 punches, okay, in big combinations, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm hitting somebody, like I'm doing it, you know, every day. Well, I'm ready to go, homeboy, okay? Make no mistake, Mike Gonzalez, I call you out to a Randy and Chuck. I mean, okay, Bob, did everybody like it when Randy and Chuck just stood there and threw punches and didn't take each other down?
Yes.
Everybody loved that, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They love that shit. Yeah. Mike Gonzalez, I'd blow you up, homeboy. Just like I did in that first round when I had to turn my back on you. Dave Huckabee, congratulations, son. Wait a minute, son. I guess I'm damn near old enough to be your dad, but obviously there's no resemblance because you look nothing like my kids who are Hollywood friendly. Anyhow, congratulations on kicking ass and going to the UFC. Have you gone to the UFC yet, or is it just PFC, or what's Dave doing?
No, Dave Huckabee fought in Bellator. He lost. He lost his last fight, and he hasn't fought in a while. I don't think he's ever made it to the UFC.
Okay, well, it's like this. Dave, when my shoulder was fucked up, and I said, you know what, my shoulder's fucked up, Dave, but I don't want you to take me to the ground because I won't be able to use my arm on the ground. But if, remember that, Bob, I said, basically, if you agree to punch, I'll still fight you because you got nothing for me and I'll knock you out. Remember when I said that?
Yes.
Okay, do you remember Dave's retort where he said, this is MMA, baby. You know, we kick, we take down, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, basically,
yeah.
I mean, it isn't it true, Bob, metaphorically, that Dave grew a pussy and flew away?
Yeah, well, he hasn't fought he fought in June, but he lost in World Series of Fighting. And so I don't know what's going to happen with him. I never liked him, to be honest with you. Just is, you know, the way he was.
Yeah, I met a dude. You meet some of the coolest motherfuckers in jail, and I can't remember dude's name right now, but they used to train with Dave. They were telling me stories about Dave only that would make Dave fucking cringe. I mean, make people laugh, okay? You know? Dave getting beat up in his own fucking gym, you know. It is what it is. Dave, talked about Dan Quinn. Let's see. Did anybody that you played football against, Dave, did anybody go anywhere? Did they do anything? Did anybody remember you, Dave, talked about fucking 2, 3, 4 years after you were gone? You know what I'm saying? Me, Bob, they were telling stories about me fucking 12 to 15 fucking years, 20 years after the fucking fact I left my high school. You know what I'm saying? I guess that's what happens when I'm faster than every black kid on the field, okay? Quicker? No, I wasn't quicker, okay? But then neither again was Marcus Allen. But you remember Marcus Allen, right?
Yes. The Raiders. Bob? For the Raiders, yeah.
Yeah, you remember Marcus Allen, right?
Yeah, he played for the Raiders, right?
Oh, yeah, okay. And wasn't Marcus Allen like the fastest guy on the field?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Marcus Allen ran a 4.67 40 just like I did, okay? And just like him, I had niggas saying, damn, that white boy's changing gear when I hit 40 yards. See, most people are topped out at 40 yards, Dave Huckabee. You know, they're not going any faster at 40 yards than they're ever going to be. Me, I was still accelerating because I had jet speed and, like, I caught Tim Brown from behind. And so what I'm getting at, Dave, I would much rather have you find somebody in Rio Linda that's dying of cancer. There is no hope, okay? The medical establishment has done what it usually does. You know, turned its back, hasn't done a good job, they're going to die. And we get them on stevia, and then they get cured. And then the fact that I blended out all the toxic shit made it quicker, you know, expedited that healing process. When they're cured, they're not going to have body odor anymore for 4 to 5 days without a shower. Now, Bob, don't you think that if pure H2O, getting all that soap out, makes it so you don't have to take a shower for 4 to 5 days, that would come in really handy with the drought, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And this is one of the most crucial things that I'm going to ever say right here, okay? The drought, Bob. There shouldn't be a drought. Popular Science Magazine last year said that in the last 10 years, Antarctica alone has shed 900 billion tons of ice back into the water, back into H2O. 900 billion tons. Do you realize how much water that is, Bob?
That's a huge amount of water. It's amazing.
Oh, it's huge. It's enough to validate Al Gore's at one time prediction that it was going to be too much water, tidal waves, flooding. All right, back on fishing, folks. Google what makes petroleum gasoline: H14 plus C6. Have you looked it up, Bob?
No, not yet. Want me to look it up
yet. Now? Not yet.
What is it?
Okay, well, it'd be cool. If petroleum gasoline is H14 plus C6, that's a chemical composition. That's how you write it.
Okay.
99% of the world thinks that it's fossil fuel that actually powers cars and makes them drive and makes planes fly, when in fact, if they took hydrogen out of every gas tank around the world, cars would sit and smoke, planes would sit and they wouldn't take off, they wouldn't fly. Tree trimmers would smoke. They wouldn't cut. Okay, it's the hydrogen that's the power. That's the internal combustion. And fact not fiction, there's a theorem, I think it was Einstein, that says nothing ever vanishes. There's always an even return. That's bullshit. When you take something past burn point, okay, when you burn it, you know, you smoke weed before, right?
No, I've never smoked weed.
Never smoked weed.
Never drank alcohol either as an adult.
Do you think there might be a chance we get you to smoke some weed in conjunction with stevia?
No, Dan, no
Bob,
way.
Bob.
No way.
Bob, you know what? I'm not going to hold you to that, all right?
Yeah.
But it's like this. If you take a torch to a bud, it's gone. There is no smoke. You know, you lost everything. You take a torch to a piece of wood, you vanish it into ash, okay, and smoke. You take gasoline, put it in the car, run it through an internal combustion engine, and it's smoked, gone into a toxic dust called smog, all right? And if there was an even return on a Los Angeles freeway, there would be humidity, okay, during the summertime. It might be brown and sticky because of all the petroleum, but it's not. It's dry. Einstein was wrong. There's a certain burn temperature that takes things past an even return and it vanishes them. And that's what's happening. We're vanishing. Well, Bob, if you had a backyard pool and we put 5 million bars of soap in that backyard pool, wouldn't 5 million bars of soap overflow it?
Yeah, you think so.
Easily, right? Then why hasn't 5 billion bars of soap plus all the other warning, toxic, danger, toxin, will kill you chemicals cause the oceans to overflow? Why not? Want to know why? Because internal combustion engines are weapons of mass destruction, okay? It's what the rich are designed to fulfill that 1% Illuminati prophecy about, what do they say? They're going to reduce the Earth's population by like 98%, is that right?
Could be.
Well, you know, you've seen that shit. What do they say?
Well, I think that, you've got half of the world's population that is living off of $2 a day. You've got economic genocide occurring, even in this country. We could cite the statistics. So I think it's capitalism. It's scarcity at its worst. It is the sequence of money trumping the sequence of life. This is all discussed in the Zeitgeist movies. Very, very good films.
There you go. Capitalism. Moneyism. It's all about money.
Yep.
And that's what all it is. And I'll tell you what, you know what my favorite song is? Tupac Shakur's All Eyes on Me. That's how it was, Bob, growing up. All Eyes on Me. Seriously. You know what? Superstar in sports, All Eyes on Me. To the point where I thought I was ugly until I was 18, was a virgin until I was 18. I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, I look in the mirror, I'm not that bad looking, you know what I'm saying? I didn't realize what the fuck I had and where it was going, but I would much rather get confidence late in the game to actually, hold on for a second. Yeah, I would actually rather get confidence late in the game, like I have now, to come up with the discovery that I have now that's going to actually save the planet. Stevia will save so much lives that just the fact that people aren't dying from sickness, that might actually threaten to crash the planet. But the fact is, Bob, there's engines out there that don't run on internal combustion, okay? They don't use exploding hydrogen into power. That's not fiction. Split H2O is a theoretical concept fuel that Einstein and all his homeboys were trying to fucking find. You know what I'm saying? What do they say? Not weapons of mass destruction. That's the internal combustion engines.
Weapons of mass deception?
What's that?
I'm trying to figure out if you lost me there. We're not weapons of mass destruction. Maybe weapons of mass deception? Weapons of mass
destruction. Perfect. Weapons of mass deception and destruction, internal combustion engines.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, water is vanishing right before our eyes. Yeah. I'll tell you what. There's a gentleman here that wants to see my ex-wife's picture. She did a photo shoot where she's looking like a fucking superstar on these, like, 1950 stars. I don't know if you ever saw it. Did you ever see that picture that I showed you, Bob?
I may have.
Yeah. Anyways, Sherry, beautiful, you know? And I'll tell you what, I would actually say things like, you know, my best friend, before we got married, he looked, and Sherry had a slight complexion problem, okay? Probably one of the reasons why I was confident. You want to know what the reason why I was confident enough to actually land sharing, Bob? Because I wasn't methamphetamine, swear to God. If it wasn't for methamphetamine, I look at Sherry and I'm like, oh, wow, way out of my league, you know what I'm saying? I'm not good enough, I'm not cool, okay? So, what I was saying is, I was trying to remember what the fuck the rich were saying. You gotta understand where I'm talking on a phone that has about 18 inches of cord, so like I'm contorted, I'm uncomfortable. What was it? Say something, Bob. It's gonna jog my memory.
The Iraq, about what the elites do, what the rich do. You're trying to tell us
what the rich do is they conquer and divide, man. You know, they use sports in America. How many kids across America this year have died in the parking lots at football games across America? It's happened more than once, have it?
Sure.
Okay, because the anger, you know, the rich, they conquer and divide. Okay, there is no difference between people, Bob. There really isn't. We're all the same. You know, we're basically born good. If they're created, made into evil, that's a different story. It generally has to do with a lack of money. And I guarantee you what I'm going to do with my money, Bob, I'm going to make a movie, and it's going to start off, the first scene is going to show a child predator. It's going to show a child predator duct taped into some kind of chair, duct taped, naked, and it's going to show a crew, 3 to 5 guys, with blow torches, and they're going to death sentence, and they're going to blowtorch his cock off, okay, because that's what he used to hurt a child, okay, and it's going to go from there. Hopefully we get someone like Angelina Jolie to play the lead. Hopefully, well, did I say this? There might be copycats, Bob. It might actually lead to people that think they're going to fucking harm kids going, oh, wow, you know what? Shit's changed. I can't do that anymore. Can't get away with it. You feel me?
Yeah.
What do you think? You think that'd be a good idea, Bob?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Don't sound too enthusiastic, Bob. You getting tired on me?
No, I mean, well, I got about like 7 or 8 minutes because I got a radio show to do. In a little while, so you know, I was going to probably wrap it up soon. We've been going on for like 45 minutes, which is good because I'm going to play this on Monday, tomorrow, and my audience hasn't heard from you in a while. We've been really trying to get an update with you, so I think this is going to be good.
Cool. Good shit, my friend. Yeah, Aaron Brink, let's do a video of the violin. It actually works, Aaron. And I'm wondering, Aaron, were you paid off not to be able to play the violin, or is it just because you're a good-looking guy and you're fucking stupid, okay? I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick because Aaron and I thought he was fairly cool, and he beat me, yada, yada. Bob Carson, do you remember the truth, what happened? Al, I didn't get a chance to warm up or stretch before I fought Aaron Brink, okay? Okay, just out of curiosity, what do you think happens against Aaron Brink if I'm the same guy that fought Bonapour?
Oh, I think it's a much different fight, perhaps a different outcome.
Aaron Brink, if I'm the same guy that fought Bonapour, I'm breaking you the fuck off, homeboy. I tell you what, if I was confident, it's like this. When you're in shape and you don't stretch, you don't warm up, and you start exerting, Sometimes you tighten up and you go down. So I didn't want to do that. Homie, you fucking having your hands up. I will use you any which way but loose, okay? Let's do a movie on that shit. And then we start doing movies, Aaron Brink, where there's women out there that are getting fucking beat up or whatever by their fucking, their husbands or their boyfriends, and they want out. And then you and I will show up and we'll fight to see who fights the man. And then whoever wins gets to play the violin on the willing female. What do you think, Bob? That would actually probably sell, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly.
There we go. There's another money idea. It is what it is. I'll tell you what, Bob. I got a lot for you, homeboy. I'm out. And big things are going to happen. You know what gives us time? What gives us time, Bob, is that we have so much ice trapped at the North and the South Poles. Although it is melting away, vanishing in alarming, astonishing, scary speed. You realize that, right?
Do you know who this Alabaster Codify is?
Oh, is she fine?
I don't know if it's a real account or she just posted on... She wanted me to ask you if you still have feelings for her and if you're going to try to take revenge on the English voice for destroying your life. That first question seems a little bit...
Do I still have feelings for her? Alabaster Codify was absolutely gorgeous. Gorgeous. Okay? Could I have feelings for her? I'll tell you what. If I gave her 100 orgasms in a one-hour session playing the violin, how many feelings would she have for me, Bob? What do you think?
A lot.
and would I take revenge on the English voice? I think that we should talk to NASA or the NSA. You know what I'm saying? They were taping recording everybody's phone calls, so they know who the English voice was. You know what I'm saying? And the English voice was calling up and threatening to kill me, kill my kids, ask for my kids. You know? That's the only reason why I had a gun. Do you think I need a gun for myself, homeboy? No. I don't. I have my gun, that's my kids, dog. Straight up. So, with that said, Sac County is going to go down. Want to know why? They said that Ernie didn't have nothing to say about the calls threatening me. And Ernie was pissed because Ernie was like, fuck that. He goes, he heard like either two or three times when I was getting, and see, think about it. I'm over at Ernie's house. I'm in a black neighborhood, right? and I get a call saying that they're going to kill me and all my nigger friends, all right? Well, guess what? Ernie heard that. Ernie heard that, dog. And Ernie wanted to testify about that, but they said that he had nothing to say. Wow. And that was my own people. That was Sandra DiGiulio, the first public defender, the first fucking cunt that came, I didn't say that word, did I? Okay. She comes up to me, Bob. The first thing out of her mouth, she goes, so what's up with the strike out of Florida? I'm like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. 23 fucking years later, they've already found out like 4 or 5 times that it's nothing but a misdemeanor trespass, but they're going to be coming at me like it's a strike and trying to send me to prison?
Yeah.
That's how they do it, man. That's how they do it in Scandal-Minto County, Bob Carson.
Yes, sir. That's
yes, sir.
Frank Stams posted, but I don't think it's the real Frank Stams.
What did Frank say?
He said, "Tell Danny we hope he's healthy and is getting back to normal." I don't think.
Hey, you know what? Put it like this, man. If Frank and I would have been friends, if it wasn't for Holtz. Put it like this: if Lou Holtz starts Frank Stams at any inside linebacker position that he wants, because he's a stud, he proved it. Okay. If Frank Stams doesn't play Cedric Figueroa's outside linebacker position, Figs is actually at the LT spot, and then Dan Quinn is playing the drop backer position because I can fucking outrun every black guy in the field. We have the most dominant defense in the history of college football, and we probably shut West Virginia out and assign him in a game. Guaranteed, my friend.
Well, listen, Dan, I think we're going to end it there. We look forward to hearing from you. Maybe we'll do something next week. We've got to have you call live into the show so we can take some phone calls. That'll be a great interaction with the fans. And
cool.
Look forward to you posting some videos on our YouTube account. Very, very important stuff. So, listen.
All right, in closing, Vago Nation, I love Crazy Joe. He's my uncle. He's my brother. He's my family for life. Marty James Livicott, if it wasn't for Lou Holtz, Tony Siragusa, if it's not for Lou Holtz, you and Marty are playing against each other in the NFL, and since Marty got you when you were in high school, does that mean that Marty is an all-pro and Hall of Famer? Who can tell? You know what I'm saying? Because Holtz skews so much reality, and it's like this. For everybody out there, treat me like Joe Dirt. Okay, everybody loves Joe Dirt, and you know what? He's one of the best. And guess what? When I was at Notre Dame, I would have thought that Joe Dirt had zero value, zero worth, okay, because he wasn't a fucking superstar. Huh? But guess what? Joe Dirt is one of my heroes now, and that's what I'm going to shoot for.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks a lot, and let's talk sometime in a few days or so.
Bob Carson, thank you very much. Got love for you in a heterosexual way, and that will never change. Peace out.
So long, Dan. Goodbye.